From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Monday edition, responding to the prospects of more than 100,000 coronavirus-related deaths, President Trump announced yesterday that the restrictive social distancing guidelines would be extended through the month of April. Dr. Marty McCary, a Johns Hopkins health policy expert and surgeon, joins us later here on Washington Watch. Also, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio threatened to permanently close churches if they did not comply with the order not to meet. Now, I certainly support churches complying, but did de Blasio cross the line with threatening to permanently shutter non-complying churches? We'll talk about it. And in what looked like a page from ancient Roman history, the New York Times on Friday ran with an opinion piece entitled "The Road to the Corona Hell, a Coronavirus Hell, Was Paved by Evangelicals." Former Attorney General for Missouri and now Senator Josh Hawley is here in just a moment. Also, I've said before, we cannot take our eyes off international matters. Florida Congressman Ted Yoho is here on the latest news out of North Korea. As the communist country warned this morning, it has lost interest in nuclear talks with the United States. This comes the day after they test-fired what they called a super-large multiple rocket launcher. And finally, David Clawson and Travis Weber will join me for a look at how churches and communities responded to the influenza pandemic in 1918 that claimed many, many lives. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. All right, a New York Times op-ed, which appeared on Friday, which was originally entitled "The Road to Coronavirus Hell Was Paved by Evangelicals," later changed, made it clear that the left wants Christians to be the scapegoats of the coronavirus outbreak. Now, in the same vein, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio made a dangerous threat on Friday to permanently close New York City churches and synagogues if they didn't comply with orders not to meet. Now, this can't be taken lightly. Joining me now to talk about this is Missouri Senator Josh Hawley. Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks so much for having me.
Senator, this New York Times opinion piece that essentially blamed evangelicals for the outbreak of coronavirus, saying that because of their influence on President Trump, this administration was ill-equipped to deal with it. Where is this coming from?
You know, it's one of the most unbelievable pieces. Even by New York Times standards, Tony, that piece of hate mongering was just really exceptional. And that's really what it is. I mean, this is hate mongering. This is the attempt by the radical left, who are the self-appointed intellectual leaders of this country. It's what they claim. And they will not let any crisis pass without an attempt to inflict their own social agenda on this country, which in this case means shutting up people who they don't like, and with apparently evangelicals at the top of that list. So to use this health emergency, the greatest public health crisis our country has faced in a century, to try and use that to demagogue against evangelicals. I mean, last I looked, there were evangelical doctors and nurses and EMTs who are on the front lines of this, not to mention folks who I know and right at home in Missouri are doing things like in their Bible studies, creating care packages to take to the elderly, to shut-ins, and to the doctors who are working emergency room shifts in the hospital. So it is an incredible attack that is totally unwarranted and ought to be called out and condemned.
Well, obviously, they're not familiar with history. We can take a look just at more recent history in the founding of this country and the establishment of hospitals. We wouldn't have the best healthcare system in the world had it not been for faith-based organizations that created the hospitals. In fact, two of the top three hospitals in New York City have faith-based connections. One was Presbyterian in its founding, and the other Jewish.
Yes, indeed, and even still today across the country, and certainly in my home state of Missouri, the network of hospitals that are sustained by faith-based institutions in my state, whether it's Baptist hospitals, Catholic hospitals, You mentioned two more in New York. I mean, there's a long legacy, proud legacy of the believers who are founded hospitals, who work in hospitals. Again, so many believers now give their lives in service as doctors, as nurses, as aides, as emergency responders. And, you know, this is not a time to try and divide up Americans on the basis of faith, for heaven's sake. I mean, this is one of the most reprehensible pieces of that New York Times opinion column. I mean, to try and use this crisis as an attempt to go after and silence Christians in America, it's just it's disgusting. As I said in my comment on last week on Friday, it's sick. I mean, that's what it really is. It's sick. And frankly, the New York Times should be ashamed that they ran the piece. I understand it's the opinion only technically of that columnist, but they made the choice editorially to give that opinion space and to legitimize it, and that was the wrong choice.
But does it not also, Senator, take the focus off who is really to blame for this virus?
Oh, indeed. I mean, and this is the thing that is the worst part of it, is they have the Chinese Communist Party, who we know lied to the world, lied to their own people and then to the world systematically over weeks and months. I mean, we know that they silenced doctors who tried to blow the whistle there in the Wuhan province in China. They jailed journalists who tried to report on this epidemic when it was breaking out. They had cases weeks and weeks and weeks before they reported it, China did, and they are still, we believe, systematically underreporting the true scope of the virus's spread and the deaths in their country. Their actions have cost the world lives, thousands of lives, billions, maybe trillions of dollars when this is all said and done. And it's not just the money, Tony. What it represents is lost businesses, lost jobs, lost
right, futures,
opportunities. Yeah, and that's all because of what the Chinese Communist Party did in turning what would have been a very serious health issue in the Wuhan province into a global pandemic.
And the New York Times wants to blame Christians being anti-science for the paving the way of for the coronavirus. I want to transition to another topic coming out of New York. Again, on Friday, Mayor de Blasio. And first off, let me just lay the foundation for this. I have been from the very start when orders came down that churches should not meet, or any gatherings, rather, not churches, but any group over 10 should not meet. I support that. I think it's a public health issue, and we should comply with those orders. Now, they should not be selectively enforced. But de Blasio, I believe, crossed the line. And you have a history of defending religious freedom. I mean, you were attorney general in Missouri. Before that, you were a religious freedom constitutional attorney defending religious freedom. Let me just ask you this question. Did he not cross the line by saying he would permanently shut down these churches if they did not comply?
The Constitution in no way permits that, Tony. I mean, quite the reverse. This is the very reason we have a First Amendment, which specifically protects the right to free exercise of religion. And the United States Supreme Court has been very clear that that's not just the free exercise of isolated individuals. That means religious institutions. That means the churches where we gather together to worship. So the idea that some mayor, I don't care who he is, thinks that he can permanently shut down a church is frankly, it would be laughable if it weren't so scary that he could say that with a straight face. So that is exactly what the First Amendment was designed to prevent. And listen, I'm with you. I mean, obviously, we want people to take precautions. I know that my home church in Missouri is abiding by the health recommendations and requests and mandates of local health authorities, including not having Bible studies that exceed, well, in fact, I think any at this point, just out of great caution. And that is very admirable and the right thing to do. But this idea that an elected official could threaten to use executive power to permanently close churches is insane and unconstitutional.
And you know, he could have misstated that, meaning that he was only going to close them during the duration of the crisis, but he's been asked to clarify, and he has not. And I think my opinion is I've been actually working with government officials to try to get churches to comply with the orders. I actually think this fans the flame of noncompliance because it shows that he goes beyond the crisis to something else, and that is hostility to religion.
Yes, it is. You're exactly right, and it's extremely unhelpful for folks who are trying to make the case, you know, in many parts of the country where there isn't yet demonstrated community spread, and you may have local health officials who are urging churches to either limit their gatherings, cancel their Sunday services, or what have you. Those kind of comments that are blatantly unconstitutional, blatantly in violation of our First Amendment, really sends the exact wrong message. I mean, it shows that it suggests that, again, you've got these leftists, radical leftists out there, who want to use government power and want to use a crisis to try and discriminate against Christians. I mean, it's just absolutely absurd. Of course, Mayor de Blasio has been under fire for his poor handling of this crisis in New York from the beginning. So, you know, maybe it's just an attempt to distract attention. What needs to happen is these leftist radicals need to stop trying to divide Americans based on our faith and based on the things we most fundamentally believe, and call the country to something greater, which is we are all in this together. And it is right. An opportunity for us to serve one another. And Christians can and should lead the way in serving, in helping those who are in need and in danger, and in offering hope in this time of crisis.
Without question. Absolutely the case. Senator Josh Hawley, as always, great to have you on the program. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
All right. Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri. And again, look, you've heard me talk about it. If you were listening last week, I think churches should comply. In fact, one pastor apparently arrested in Tampa, Rodney Howard Brown, for having services yesterday, according to news reports. And I don't think he should have met. I just don't think churches should be meeting. But what de Blasio did, in my view, and the senators as well, I think crossed the line. And this is not helpful, because this does show that there is an agenda beyond the current crisis on the behalf of some, not this administration, but some politicians out there. And that fuels this resistance to compliance, which is wrong as well. In fact, on that first story, if you want to, I was on Shannon Bream Friday night talking about the New York Times piece, and just that it was a rant. It was a hate-filled, bigoted rant toward Christians. And if you want to see that clip, you can go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Also, I got a poll question for you, because we got more corona coverage, but we're also going to look at some foreign policy issues that you need to be aware of. But here's a question for you today. As the world adjusts to the new normal, what has most affected you and your family? Think about it, working from home, homeschooling your kids, being separated from friends and extended family, loss of income, illness. What is it? I'm going to give you the number here in just a minute. And you text me and I'll send you the poll question. All right, coming up next, President saying that the distancing guidelines, these restrictive social distancing guidelines, will be extended through April. This includes a cap of meetings have no more than 10 people in any given meeting. We're going to talk about it with Dr. Marty McCary, a Johns Hopkins health policy expert and surgeon, next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. More Washington Watch to come. Is historic masculinity lost forever? Where can boys, young men, husbands, and fathers find a model of manhood, leadership, and strength in a culture of gender confusion? We need men to be men, tough with compassionate strength, bent toward justice without compromise, locking arms and standing. We need to be the men God created us to be and fight for all that is right, true, and just. This is Tony Perkins inviting you to join us at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference. To find out more, go to standcourageous.com. This conference is led by men who are seasoned, compassionate men who understand the issues of the day and will invest in you, helping you understand your role as a defender, a provider, an instructor, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, so that you can have the generational influence that God has designed you to have. Learn more at StandCourageous.com. That's StandCourageous.com.
Did you know that Planned Parenthood is the primary supplier of abortions in the U.S.? According to Planned Parenthood's most recent annual report, it committed over 345,000 abortions in fiscal year 2018. That means, on average, Planned Parenthood aborted 1,768 babies every single day in 2018. And while Planned Parenthood's report revealed an increase in abortions committed, many of the services they provide, such as breast exams and cancer screenings, have drastically decreased. FRC recently released its 2020 edition of The Real Planned Parenthood, Leading the Culture of Death. In this resource, you will find many facts revealing the truth, that Planned Parenthood is in the business of abortion, not healthcare. To access this resource and to find out more, go to frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts. That's frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts.
We can all benefit from a good lecture. They inform you and grow you. But sometimes you can't make it in person to every talk, seminar, or lecture you'd like to. Fortunately, Family Research Council now has a new podcast so you won't miss out. FRC's new weekly podcast called Lecture Me was created to help inform and equip listeners on the biggest issues affecting our culture today. Each episode presents a lecture selected from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast features today's top thinkers who address important issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Make sure to stay tuned after each lecture to hear FRC's thoughts on the content as they further discuss the topic at hand. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at TPerkins. And to take the poll question for today, text radio to 53445. That's 53445. Text radio. I'll send you the poll question. As the world adjusts to a new normal, what has most affected you and your family? Text radio to 53445. All right, based upon projections that death tolls in the U.S. could exceed 100,000 people, President Trump announced yesterday that he will extend the restrictive social distancing guidelines through the month of April. Now, this includes a cap of 10 people on meetings. Now, will the continuation of these limits save lives? Joining me now is Dr. Marty McCary, a Johns Hopkins health policy expert and surgeon. Doctor, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good to be with you, Tony.
All right, based on what the president said yesterday with the data coming in and now projections from his task force saying that we could see death tolls from the coronavirus exceed 100,000, is he taking the right steps?
I think so. You know, we want our leaders to be optimists, and we want them to give us spirit and hope. But the reality is they are all closely following these numbers, not only in the preview that we're seeing in some countries overseas like Spain, but also locally in New York City. And it's pretty clear to everybody that we'd rather be in a position where we look back and say, you know, we were overprepared and it wasn't quite as bad as we thought, than to actually have avoidable deaths. And right now, unfortunately, looks like we are on track to have our hospitals overburdened and to maybe see some avoidable deaths. That's what we really want to address.
So the problem is really the overwhelming of the healthcare system at one time, how rapidly this curve goes up. And so we have the inability to care for people. That's the biggest crisis that's presently developing, is it not?
Absolutely. It's all about rationing and our limited resources at the peak of this epidemic. So, you know, folks may be going outside right now saying it's a beautiful day. There's, you know, my kids are in my backyard playing. What's the big deal? I don't know anyone who's dying that I'm friends with. What's the big deal? And the reality is we are gearing up for a tsunami that's going to hit with a massive impact on that peak. Now, until then, it'll be a slow symmetric incline. And on the decline, it'll be about equal to what we see in the rise up. But we've got to ahead of time plan and manage that peak, because when that peak happens, talk to any doctor or nurse right now, it's going to be ugly. We are basically at full capacity in some U.S. hospitals with very little room to take care of people that come in from this point forward.
Now, as of this morning, we had 140,000 cases and more than 2,500 deaths. Now, the task force, in their recommendations, have projected that we could see upwards, their models show up to 200,000 deaths in the United States. Is that realistic?
Yeah, it is, Tony. Last weekend, I went on Fox News Sunday and basically suggested that we are on track right now to have hundreds of thousands of deaths and millions more cases. So I think we need to plan on that. Now, I'll tell you, even as somebody who's from Johns Hopkins, and I don't speak for the institution, but the map is a good map, and people follow the numbers, but I don't pay attention to the number of cases diagnosed. We know there was massive underreporting from some countries. Right. We know that the number of diagnoses is proportional to testing. I follow the antibody positivity rate, the number who are immune, whether or not China has reopened schools, the number of deaths per day coming out of Spain right now, the response time for 911 calls in New York City, the ventilator production rate per day right now in the United States. Those are the metrics that I follow closely.
So your projection based upon where this peaks, are we 2 weeks away, 3 weeks away? Where are we from that point?
New York is about 2 weeks away. The rest of the United States is probably 3 to 5 weeks away, depending on where you live. Now, one of the big concerns that many of us have is that some parts of the country were sort of slow to recognize that this is a real threat. Some places immediately took dramatic steps, and others, there was sort of life as usual pretty late, even up until recently. And our fear is that those places that have taken the least precautions may get hit the hardest. It's balanced by the fact that some cities have more public transit and some cities are more congested. But our concern is the cities that have been in denial, if you will, may get hit even harder, because this infection is seeded everywhere in the United States. We need to abandon the idea that it's somehow contained.
So, Dr. McCary, your recommendation to people when it comes to the guidance from the CDC, from the White House, and then from state officials, your recommendations when it comes to that guidance?
Take it seriously, and take it seriously for the sake of our most vulnerable. The reality is it is hard for this virus to really hurt young, healthy people, like children. But remember, 20% of the cases are in people, of the hospitalizations in particular, are in people age 20 to 44. So you can still get sick and very sick, but it's those at higher risk, the older and those with conditions that are far more likely to die from it. And we've got to behave to manage the influx to protect them and our number one risk group, the number one profession who is most likely to get this infection is healthcare workers. What you do in your day-to-day life will actually impact the health of healthcare workers you've never met.
Mm, very good point. Dr. McCary, thanks so much for taking time out today to join us.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
All right. Dr. Marty McCary, Johns Hopkins. I mean, it's reality. It's sobering, but it's reality, and we need to do our part. Adhere to the guidelines. Don't be going out like this is a vacation. Be praying, as more and more governors are calling upon their citizens to pray. We need to be praying that God would intervene. All right, coming up next, we have to continue to keep an eye on foreign policy. what's happening in North Korea, firing missiles over the weekend, and also down in Venezuela, what's happening there. Ted Yoho joins us next. Don't go away.
What are you reading this spring? At FRCblog.com, we have timely and original commentary on the issues facing our culture today. Our blog is written by our policy experts, the Family Research Council team, and outside contributors. On our blog, you can read about a wide variety of topics, including religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture. Some of our most recent blog posts include, "To abandon the nuclear family ideal is to abandon being human." "Why does the abortion industry hate women?" "China uses coronavirus to oppress religious minorities." And many more. At Family Research Council, our mission is to advance faith, family, and freedom in the culture by helping you to live out your faith and to stand for truth. With our blog, we hope to help you do that. Stay informed and get the resources you need at FRCblog.com. Again, that's FRCblog.com.
The Fairness for All Act was recently introduced to the House of Representatives after the passage of the Equality Act. In response, FRC has come out with a new publication, The Unfairness of the Fairness for All Act. This act attempts to find a compromise between the First Amendment protection of religious freedom and the demands of the LGBT community. Despite having the best intentions, it is an ill-advised and poorly drafted bill that does not achieve its goal. If this act is passed into law, it would allow the federal government to impose a belief system and ideology about sexual behavior and identity on all Americans. The Fairness for All Act would negatively impact religious freedom, true equality, and the privacy and safety of women. To access this resource and to learn more, go to frc.org/fairnessforall. That's frc.org/fairnessforall.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So good to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right, all things coronavirus these days, 24/7. But it's times like these, we've got to make sure that we're watching what is happening around the world. It can become a very dangerous time. I haven't talked much recently about what's happening in northeast Syria, things happening over there, Turkey making more moves. But also over the weekend, we saw North Korea taking action. Also, the administration taking some steps to possibly bring resolution to what's happening in Venezuela. Joining me now to talk about this is Congressman Ted Yoho, who serves the 3rd Congressional District of Florida. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate what you do.
Well, thank you, sir. Let's start with North Korea. Tell our listeners what happened over the weekend there.
Well, we saw an escalation of medium or short-range ballistic missiles that Kim Jong-un is hell-bent on perfecting, and he's doing at a time when the rest of the world is struggling with coronavirus. And, you know, it's an escalation and provocation of what he's been doing. And I think that, if I count right, that's the sixth missile launch the month of March. And this is something I don't know if he's just starved for attention. But it's something that is, I know the rest of us are taking very seriously, considering the location where he launched those right outside of Japan's economic exclusive zone.
It you know, just watching him, reading some of the press accounts and the statements that came out this morning, it would suggest that maybe he's just trying to get attention. He blasted Secretary Pompeo, saying that you know, he's not talking for President Trump, and you know, trying to just think, get attention. Either that, or he's trying to rally support within North Korea. Who knows what's happening as it pertains to the coronavirus in North Korea?
Right. Again, they claim they have no cases, but we know that's not true. Our NGOs have reported. They've got multiple cases, and of course, there's that report. And I hope it's not true that somebody that tested positive, they assassinated, they shot him in the head. And it's, again, when you have a very despotic leader like Kim Jong-un in a very closed society that does not have the freedom of speech, the freedom of thought, he can do and say whatever he wants. He wants to be the sole source of power in North Korea. So the people look up to him. And it's just such a charade or a facade that he puts out there. And I think on the world stage, he feels very inadequate and very I think he's very insecure. And so that's why he does what he does.
But makes him dangerous. That makes him dangerous.
Very dangerous. You know, and this is something, you know, if we look at the UN Security Council, the permanent members, which Russia and China are members of that, along with us, there were 15 members that voted unanimously to put sanctions on North Korea. China and Russia have backed off of those sanctions, so they're allowing North Korea to move forward. If they were to hold the line on the sanctions, we could get this nonsense cleared up in North Korea. And again, I can't say it enough. Every time you buy a product from China, made in China, you're empowering that regime. And if they feel the economic pinch by people in the world saying enough is enough, we are not going to support a regime or a government that doesn't come to the table with us to try to resolve these things in North Korea.
Extremely important point that we can either aid this or stand against it by how we spend our money. Very quickly, Congressman Yoho, last week the United States placing a $15 million bounty on Maduro down in Venezuela. A pretty significant step, is it not?
This is a huge step, but this is something that's been leading up to that, because we've known for years that Maduro and his generals around him have been very active in the drug trade. They're taking payoffs. They're facilitating the transport of the cocaine through Venezuela to Central America. Maduro's vice president is very active in that. He's a radical Islamist, and they have been very active in that. And of course, with one of the generals facing extradition charges from Colombia, he kind of spilled the beans on Maduro, which makes it very legitimate to go after him as a drug trafficker, no different than El Chapo. And, you know, I think this is a very smart move by the administration, because it's not just us. It's, you know, other Western style countries or countries that just want to get, you know, the drug trafficking under control.
I mean, this has to make Maduro be, I mean, he's got to be paranoid. Everywhere he turns, somebody now sees $15 million sitting on his head.
Sure. And I'm sure that price will go up until he gets brought in, and then he'll be prosecuted according to our laws. We know that virtually all the cocaine that comes out of Colombia, a big portion of that goes through Venezuela, and also from Venezuela, it's coming through the Caribbean. And so we know this is happening, and this is something that, you know, Maduro either changes way or get out of the business.
Wow, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. Congressman Ted Yoho, as always, great to have you on the program. Thanks so much for taking time to join us today.
Tony, take care, and God bless. Bye.
Thank you, sir. All right, don't go away, folks. By the way, during the break, take the poll question. Text radio to 53445. That's 53445. Text the word radio. When we come back, David Clawson joins me, as well as Travis Weber. We're going to be talking about what churches did in the 1918 influenza pandemic. How'd they deal with it? We're going to talk about that next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. Where can young men, husbands, and fathers find a model of real manhood, leadership, and strength in today's culture of gender confusion? This is Tony Perkins inviting you to join us at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference, led by men who are seasoned, compassionate men who understand the issues of the day and will help you understand your role as a defender, provider, instructor, battle buddy, and chaplain, so that you can have the generational influence God has designed you to have. Learn more at StandCourageous.com.
Recently, a bill called the Fairness for All Act was introduced to the House of Representatives. In response, FRC has a new resource, the Unfairness of the Fairness for All Act. This act attempts to find a compromise between the First Amendment's protection of religious freedom and the demands of the LGBT community. But, unfortunately, it is a poorly drafted bill that would negatively impact religious freedom, true equality, and the privacy and safety of women. Learn more at frc.org/fairnessforall.
Did you know that Planned Parenthood is the primary supplier of abortions in the U.S.? According to Planned Parenthood's most recent annual report, it committed over 345,000 abortions in fiscal year 2018. That means, on average, Planned Parenthood aborted 1,768 babies every single day in 2018. And while Planned Parenthood's report revealed an increase in abortions committed, many of the services they provide, such as breast exams and cancer screenings, have drastically decreased. FRC recently released its 2020 edition of The Real Planned Parenthood, Leading the Culture of Death. In this resource, you will find many facts revealing the truth, that Planned Parenthood is in the business of abortion, not healthcare. To access this resource and to find out more, go to frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts. That's frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts.
We can all benefit from a good lecture. They inform you and grow you. But sometimes you can't make it in person to every talk, seminar, or lecture you'd like to. Fortunately, Family Research Council now has a new podcast so you won't miss out. FRC's new weekly podcast called Lecture Me was created to help inform and equip listeners on the biggest issues affecting our culture today. Each episode presents a lecture selected from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast features today's top thinkers who address important issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Make sure to stay tuned after each lecture to hear FRC's thoughts on the content as they further discuss the topic at hand. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So good to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. Hope you had a good weekend at home with gatherings less than 10. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, if you'd like to take the poll question, and the question is this, as the world adjusts to a new normal, I don't know how you're doing. I mean, it is an adjustment. But quite frankly, it's actually kind of nice to be at home. It's been very busy with things going on, but at least at home. And so what has most affected you and your family? Working from home, homeschooling your kids, being separated from friends and extended family. We've experienced that, kind of staying away from the grandparents, loss of income. You know, many people have lost their jobs. It's projected that we may see 1/3 of the workforce unemployed by the time this is over. Illness, what have you had to adjust to? Let me know. Text me, radio, at 53445. All right, we were talking earlier at the program about New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio, who on Friday, in fact, I didn't play this clip. I forgot to play this clip. Let me play this clip from his press conference on Friday in New York City. Greg, play that clip for us.
Everyone has been instructed that if they see worship services going on, they will go to the officials of that congregation. They'll inform them they need to stop the services and disperse. If that does not happen, they will take additional action, up to the point of fines and potentially closing the building permanently.
Whoa. I'm good with everything up to the final statement. Now, you heard me last week. I think churches should comply. I think it's foolish for churches to continue to meet, especially given the number of reports that we're getting of people being infected at church. In fact, one out today, I think 60 choir members that came down with the coronavirus. Now, most of these cases that we've seen in the last week or so are churches that met prior to the restrictions on meeting, but it had already broken out. Now, you have these restrictions in place, and you have some churches continuing to meet. I have one in my own community that's doing it. I've talked to that pastor. I've told him it's not wise for him to do that. And I support the civil leaders taking the appropriate actions. But de Blasio goes so far as to say that he will permanently close these facilities. Now, who does he think he is? Now, look, gave him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe he just was a little zealous, but that was Friday. And he has not corrected himself. If it was a misstatement, he needs to correct it, but he has not. This, in my view, fuels noncompliance because it feeds that narrative, which is real in some cases, that this is not about the crisis at hand, the health crisis, but it is about a hostility to religious freedom that is being exposed among the ranks of the left. And so this causes those non-complying churches to dig in. I think it's wrong on both sides, but it's what we're dealing with. But history tells us that this, you know, this is not the first time. You know, it's the Bible says there's nothing new under the sun. Well, back in 1918, churches had to deal with this during the influenza pandemic, what some call the Spanish flu, where 675,000 Americans died. That's a lot, especially when you consider the size of the country at that point. Joining me now to talk more about this is Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy here at the Family Research Council, and David Clausen, who is the Director of our Christian Ethics and Biblical Worldview. David and Travis, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you.
Let me start, Travis, just with you on de Blasio. Has de Blasio crossed the line?
I think he certainly crossed the line, or at least has crossed the line of needing to provide clarity on what he means. Because, Tony, as we've discussed, we've noticed since the beginning of this current dynamic with coronavirus, we're facing a lot of situations in which churches, along with other gatherings, are legitimately being restricted for the compelling public interest of guarding the health and safety of Americans. And this is fine, as long as there's no targeting or discrimination against religious entities particularly. But if he's saying that churches are going to permanently be shut down, implying that that is beyond the government's reasonable need, a compelling interest in guarding health and safety in terms of coronavirus, absolutely, it's blatantly unconstitutional. And he needs to clarify things because right now, as you said, you're going to have people who take this as reason to push back against the government unreasonably. And we need people to understand that with reasonable restrictions as needed right now, we all need to play our part. But this doesn't help things when you have him saying what he said earlier.
David Clausen, the church faced this in the United States back in 1918 during the influenza pandemic that spread across the country. So this is not the first time that this has happened.
No, it's not. And you quoted it, Ecclesiastes 1 and Solomon. He said, nothing is new under the sun. And the church faced this just over 100 years ago in 1918 with the Spanish flu. And, you know, this is a difficult time. You know, our hearts ache. As Christians, we're a people who gather and who gather frequently. So, you know, there was an aching in my own heart on Sunday when I couldn't gather with the congregation that I've covenanted together in church membership. But there are times that we cannot meet, and there are times that we should not meet. And that this is one of those times out of love of neighbor and Romans 13 being subject to the governing authorities. But you're absolutely right, and there's a really interesting article, Tony, that was in Pathos today titled What the 1918 Influenza Pandemic Meant for American Churches. And it actually features several newspaper clippings from newspapers in 1918 that document some of the ways that churches dealt with the regulations they were facing. They were told they couldn't meet, and some pastors went along with that. Others kind of fought it. So it's the same kind of thing. History repeats itself.
It is. It's really fascinating that there were churches that continued to meet, and the authorities stepped in and had to shut down those meetings. So really, a very similar debate that is unfolding right now took place back then. But also, the flip side of that, there were the positive things that the churches were doing back then. We see them doing today. Churches, they didn't sit there twiddling their thumbs. They got busy serving the needs of people in their communities.
Oh, absolutely. And I'll just give two examples, Tony. One was a newspaper clipping from the Daily Telegram out of Worcester, Massachusetts. And it talks about how there were three local churches that got together to provide food and clothing to children and food to influenza patients. Wonderful story of the body of Christ mobilizing and serving their community. But my favorite story, Tony, that's featured in this article comes out of a Milwaukee newspaper that ran an article on Sunday, October 20th, 1918. And there was one sentence that just really touched me. And it said that temporary church closures in Milwaukee did not leave the city's pastors with any surplus of leisure on their hands. And then it goes on to say that these pastors were encouraging their members to engage in home worship, read sermons published in newspapers, which would be, I guess, our equivalent of families having family worship and then live streaming their sermons. But it's just really neat that the newspaper noted that Protestant and Catholic clergy were devoting much of their energy to pastoral care and calls and visiting those that were sick. And so this idea that the pastors did not have any surplus of leisure on their hands because they were going about serving their members, serving their communities, and that's exactly, 100 years later, that's exactly what we see churches doing today to combat the coronavirus.
Yeah, some may take this the wrong way, but I actually enjoyed Sunday. The last two Sundays, we've been at home. In fact, yesterday I watched online my former worship leader, Jeremy Daly, at his new church in Pensacola, Florida, watched that and then, you know, led my own family in a study of Scripture along with the two-year Bible reading that we're doing. And so we had a great time at home. So it's not like we have to, you know, break with worshiping and studying God's Word. In fact, the responsibility, I think, shifts to the fathers, to the head of the homes, to lead their family in worship and have conversations. And so I think we need to look at what we should not look at what we cannot do, but rather look at what we can do. And I know, Travis, you've put up, we've got a website that has a listing for churches of some things, creative ideas of ways to worship and other things that churches can do in the midst of what now is going to be an extended period of time when they can't meet.
That's correct, Tony. And this website is as you know, frc.org/church. There, churches, pastors, and others can find resources that we are compiling in order to try to be helpful to folks during this coronavirus crisis. Resources for pastors and churches on that they can draw from, they can draw inspiration from, and it may provoke another idea that we haven't even thought of. We really want this to be a hub of activity for the church as it serves communities around the country during this coronavirus crisis. Just a few items at the top of that page. We have a resource sheet on the left side of the page. In the middle, there's a call that we had hosted, that you'd hosted with President Trump, Vice President Pence, Secretary Carson, and others on this idea. On the right side, we have a recent publication by us on how churches might apply for aid under the Phase 3 relief bill that was just passed. Many other resources on that page. We really want this to be a hub of information, though, so folks can continue to try to access that page, reach out to us with information. And there's a lot more we can talk about on this topic, as you know.
And folks, so check that out. In fact, if you have some ideas that tell us, if your church or you've discovered something to do, a way to minister to your community, and it's not on that site, hey, share it with us. We'll post it. Send us a story. If there's a news story, send it to us. We're kind of making that a one-stop location for kind of all things church-related as it pertains to the coronavirus and the response and the help and all of that. So if you've got some ideas or if something's happened in your community that you saw, send it to us. We'll put it on there because we want those type of ideas to spread quicker than the virus and be out there in terms of helping other people. The website, TonyPerkins.com. And folks, you're listening to Washington Watch. Travis Weber, my guest, David Clawson as well. Let me give you the results for the poll question, and I'll try to do this again at the end if you haven't responded to it. But here it is. When the question is, as the world adjusts to a new normal, what has most affected you and your family? 5% say working from home. 2% said homeschooling kids. Here's the big one. Being separated from friends and family, extended family, 79%. I would say ditto to that one. Loss of income, 13%. Illness, 0. So if you'd like to respond to that, still time to do so. When we look at the response of the church, the response of the country to this crisis, David, yesterday I was on Fox and Friends in the morning talking about how events like this could actually bring about an awakening. It causes us to kind of the noise and everything to die down, all of the things that distract us or put aside for a moment, and we ponder the bigger questions of life. Could that be something that could come ahead behind this?
I think it could, and I hope so. And I just want to add, Tony, it's just, to me, it's been amazing to see how creative churches are getting. It's just been so encouraging to see that even in difficult, uncertain times, the gospel of Jesus Christ is going all over the country. You mentioned the resource, Tony, but one of the things that we're doing on that frc.org/church site is compiling a list of stories from churches and ways they're adjusting to serve their members and ways they're serving their community. One example I'll give you is just Faith Life Church in Ohio. These are some of our friends. It's a larger church in New Albany, Ohio. And one of their pastors emailed me yesterday, actually, after their services and said that 50 people were saved yesterday through their live stream services. And what they think is a lot of people are watching this at home and then sharing it to all of their Facebook friends and Twitter friends. And so people that might not normally watch a worship service are seeing this video pop up and are clicking on it. Mm-hmm. They're watching the message and they're responding. And so if there are any other churches that are doing something to serve their members, to serve their congregations, we've actually set up an email address. It's stories@frc.org. Again, stories@frc.org. And we're asking Christians and we're asking just pastors to send us ways that they are serving their communities during this crisis. And we'd like to highlight some of those on our new website, frc.org/church.
That's great, because we do want to tell those stories. Again, we shouldn't focus on what we cannot do because of the current restrictions and crisis that we're facing, but rather focus on what we can do, the opportunities that we have because of the crisis. And I think that will, as you said, the fruit from that will be tremendous. And yes, I do think that we could see a spiritual awakening in this country if we do our part as believers. Number one, not to get to be overcome with anxiety because of the uncertainty and not wring our hands in frustration because we can't meet, but rather look at how we can find needs that we can meet individually and even collectively as the church. David and Travis, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, and folks, thank you for joining me as well. Check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.